I'm Dr. Leif Tapanilla from the Idaho Museum of Natural History, and I'm here with Peter Pruitt from Zoo Idaho, and this is The Nature of Idaho. Coming to you from the 1B, Bannock County that is, we're talking all about Idaho, its wild places and wild faces, the natural setting that makes Idaho an incredible place to live and be proud of.
Hey, our guest today is Dr. Ernest Keeley. He's professor of biology at Idaho State University. Peter, today we're talking about fish right here in Idaho. I think we've got a few.
Yeah, I think we have several fish hanging out here. And it's a timely topic because the other day we had a science trivia at the zoo, and I asked our teams what the study of ichthyology was.
Oh, very good. How many people knew what ichthyology meant?
About half.
About half? That's
so
pretty good.
Yeah, so okay. Encourage them to listen today to today's episode.
Do you have a favorite fish here in Idaho?
No.
Sturgeon.
I mean, they're cool.
They're cool, big, ancient. Yeah, I'm into ancient fish, so.
Yeah, that's a good choice.
We'll dig in more with our guest in a little bit, but I bet you've got some nature news.
Yeah, Leif, I've got some bad news for people who love French fries.
No.
Yeah.
Don't say it.
Yeah. So eating 3 servings of French fries a week is associated with a 20% increase in the risk of developing type 2 diabetes.
Wait a second. Eating French fries 3 times a week, not good.
Not good.
If you want to avoid the diabetes.
Type 2 diabetes, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So
realize we're in Idaho and we're sponsored by potatoes here.
I know. But I've got some good news.
Okay, good.
With the potato eating. If you eat potatoes cooked in other ways, say boiled or baked or my favorite, mashed potatoes, it significantly reduces the risk.
It's not the French fries.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, however, you do have to be careful with potatoes because they do have a high starch content and therefore a high glycemic index. And so eating too much potatoes, no matter what, can increase your chances of type 2 diabetes. But if you replace your weekly servings of potatoes with whole grains, you can lower your risk for type 2 diabetes by 8%.
Oh, okay. So you're suggesting a balanced diet.
There's a balanced diet, yeah.
I like it.
However, if you think white rice is a good choice, that's actually worse. White rice can increase your risk of type 2 diabetes. So a balanced diet, have some potatoes, throw some whole grains in there.
And they don't always have to be fried.
And they don't always have to
be
french fried.
You can have your potatoes so many different ways.
And I would imagine, with mashed potatoes, I really like butter. You know, it's 2 tablespoons of butter in your mashed potatoes is good. You might as well throw 8.
I agree.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
Yeah, even throw some grated cheese in there as well.
A little grated cheese?
It's perfect. And then you throw the gravy on top.
What about the bacon bits?
Well, you can do that as well, depending on what you're cooking, I suppose.
I'm getting hungry. All right, it's trivia time. What is the native trout found in the upper Snake River? You're going to find out the answer if you don't already know when our guest returns. So stay tuned after the break. Dr. Ernest Keeley joins us to talk fish. Stay tuned.
Did you miss the latest edition of The Nature of Idaho or ISU's Research, Innovation, and Creativity Insights? Sometimes it's tough to hear your favorite KISU shows live, but you can listen to them on demand with our free KISU mobile app for your Apple or Android device. Search your app store for KISU to get started.
Hey, welcome back from the break. Our guest today is Dr. Ernest Keeley. He is a professor in the Biological Sciences Department right here at Idaho State University. So first off, thanks for being here and welcome to The Nature of Idaho.
Well, thank you. Thanks for the invitation.
Well, Ernest, you study fish for a living. I understand that. But could you tell us a little bit more maybe about your background and why fish have captivated you?
Well, I was one of those kids that was always interested in nature.
Yeah.
And my parents were really animal lovers. My father used to keep tropical fish, and that just was something to watch tropical fish when I was a little kid and swimming around in aquaria. It was something that really fascinated me. And I sort of have always kept that love of biology and wonder about biology. And I've been lucky enough to make a career of it.
Right on. And so here at ISU, you're a professor, you study fish, but what does that mean? Like, to be a fish biologist in that sense, like an ichthyologist.
So an ichthyologist is someone that studies fish. They study the taxonomy and systematics of the group of vertebrates that we typically call the fishes. It's actually kind of an artificial group because vertebrates also include all other kinds of vertebrates that we think of as tetrapods, birds, mammals, reptiles, amphibians. They're really just a branch of vertebrates that also have all these other vertebrates that we think of as fish or fish-like vertebrates as well. So ichthyologists study how we identify the different groups of fishes and how we classify them, how they're related to each other, their systematics. I would say, I mean, that's definitely something that I do because I have to teach people about, you know, what are the different species of fish that we find in the state, what families of fish they belong to. So I teach an ichthyology class here at the university to help students understand the different types of fishes in the state of Idaho and also in the area. But I would call myself more of an fish ecologist that knows about taxonomy and systematics of fish as well, because I have to.
So how does one go about studying fish? You know, they're in the water, right?
Yeah.
So are you standing out in the Snake River with some goggles and a snorkel with your head in the water?
I definitely do that. Go snorkeling I wear a dry suit because even in the peak of summer, if you're in flowing water, it can get pretty chilly quickly. So wear a dry suit with my mask and snorkel. I've done that over the years, as my graduate students have done, to study their behavior in relation to their ecology. So that would be one way that people do it. If you measure things like how many fish there are in a given area of stream, monitor their abundance. In streams, people typically survey them by doing electrofishing, right? Electrofisher, often people tell me you look like a Ghostbuster. You wear this backpack type thing and you have these... the electrodes, one of them is on a pole, and when you depress the electrode, when you press the switch on the electrode, it sends electricity between them, and that subdues the fish. It causes the fish their muscles to contract, and they're forced to swim to the person carrying the electrofishing equipment, and then they can be scooped up. And so it's a very systematic way of sampling the fish. So if you were measuring their abundance in a given area of stream, let's say, people often use electrofishers to sample fish. In freshwater ecosystems like streams and rivers, they would do that. If you're studying marine fish, that's a whole other area. We don't have marine fish in Idaho, of course, but people study marine fish all over the world. And, you know, that's a much more difficult thing to do because they live in water bodies that are much larger. They roam over huge areas at great depth in some cases. So there are all kinds of other ways that people, fish biologists, would have to study marine fish that I don't do, but
right.
Lots of other fish biologists do.
I'm wondering, I'm trying to get the picture of you standing in a stream in a dry suit. You've got the snorkel gear on, you've got your mask on.
Yeah.
You're trying to place yourself in the environment of a fish. If you're trying to study behavior, for example,
yeah,
do they get comfortable and just ignore you and behave sort of in a natural way without?
Yeah, they do. Know, yeah, you can be, you know, you can get quite good at sitting, moving, you know, fairly slowly, methodically to find fish because they're not going to be absolutely everywhere when you're
right.
snorkeling. And the fish are going to locate preferred habitat where they're, you know, looking for good foraging spots and or breeding spots. And when you approach them underwater, you can sort of see, usually if the water clarity is decent, you know, you can see them and slowly approach them and they become accustomed to your presence. Fish seem to respond to overhead movement because a lot of their predators
sure.
will be birds and stuff like that or something that's coming from out of the water. So when you're in the water with them and they can see you, it seems like they can become more accustomed to you and they sort of treat you more as like the background rocks and stuff like that if you move slowly
yeah.
and stuff like that.
Okay.
So as a fish ecologist, you're not necessarily always just focusing in on the fish. It's
no.
what's around the fish as well, not just in the water or the rock layout, but the vegetative layout above the stream and the river. So can you tell us a little bit about
yeah.
that?
Sure. Well, if you're studying common fish you'd find in Idaho, like trout or salmon, they often live in flowing water ecosystems, rivers and streams, and they're typically thought of as drift feeding predators. So they're feeding on what's referred to as invertebrate drift. And those are all the macroinvertebrates, usually called macroinvertebrates. They live on the surface of the rocks and the bottom of rivers, and they typically will drift. They'll enter the water column and be carried along by the currents, and the fish like salmon and trout will sit in the currents, hold position. If you've ever gone like fly fishing, you often see fish sort of holding, swimming against the current, holding a position, and then they'll move from those positions to go out and capture these little invertebrates that are being carried along by the water currents. And that's, you know, their primary food supply in a lot of rivers and streams. So, for example, even though my students and I study fish behavior, we'll often sample invertebrates, insects, things like that, that are carried by the currents. Some of them fall in from the surrounding vegetation around the stream from terrestrial sources, but then a lot of them will be produced off the bottom of the stream. Sometimes they're swept off just by the current by accident. Other cases, the invertebrates will just sort of let go. They have to disperse. They're going to enter the water column, emerge, so they can breed. They become adults and they can breed themselves. And those interactions, those instances, is where the fish will try and eat them.
Right. So I'm thinking about our at the state level, you know, we have a lot of different environments. Certainly on land, I can think of a lot of environments across our very large and diverse state. What's the diversity like among fish in our state? Do we have a lot of different kinds of species here? And then maybe we could talk about native versus exotic species.
Yes. We don't, if you compare us to like the tropical areas, we don't have a lot of species. We have about 44 native species of fish in Idaho. So it's fairly what they would call depauperate, but that's typical of an area, North America, that as you go further south, you tend to get a lot more species of fish. And that's related to the, you know, the geological history of the area. The northern part of the state, strongly influenced by during the last glaciation, sort of 15 to 18,000 years ago, it was covered by ice. So those are more recently recolonized areas of the state, from areas like to the south, the southern part of Idaho, that wasn't covered by glaciers. That probably been refuge areas where the fish species could have persisted during those colder periods. And, you know, were more widespread because the climate was wetter at that period of time and it looked kind of different than it does today. But that has a strong influence on the types of fish that we find in the state and where they're found in the state.
Okay. So 44, you said?
About 44 native species, depending on who you ask. These are lists of species that people come up with.
Yeah.
And sometimes there are differences of opinions of what we should call different species. Yeah.
Okay. So introduced species or species not naturally occurring in Idaho, how many of approximately? You add
about 50 to 60 more species.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
More
than double it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So some of those have records in the state. Quite a few of them would have established naturally reproducing populations. Other ones were recorded at different periods of time, but then it's not clear that they're still here.
So would these be mainly game fish for sporting purposes, and you do read stories about people who have goldfish, so they just throw them in a pond.
Goldfish in the pond.
And the goldfish or koi thrive.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, are we talking more like that or more introduced species for fishing and game purposes?
Definitely a lot of them were for fishing purposes, for angling purposes. People want to go out and catch, like for example, brown trout and brook trout. Are commonly found in the state, but they're not native to Western North America. But then there are a whole bunch of other species as well. Like you're saying, there people, you know, get tired of the goldfish, and so they just release it. Mm-hmm. And goldfish are definitely one of those non-native species that are found in the state. There are also instances of hot springs or warmer water springs that people have gone and released lots of other types of aquarium fish. So there are cichlids, guppies, mollies that are also recorded as a non-native species that are found in the state. If you travel north from Pocatello to, I think it's past Mackey area, there's Pierre Hot Springs, and that has a whole range of tropical fish.
Really?
That are found in there. It's a warm spring, so it doesn't get super hot, and the fish are able to survive, and you can find cichlids common aquarium fish that's naturally found in Central America, but also things like guppies and mollies and tilapia is another one that's found.
Okay, so this is begging the question, what's the influence of these introduced species on the native Idaho species?
Well, it can vary dramatically. Some of them can be quite significant. For example, brook trout, which is found in eastern part of North America, all through eastern Canada, Appalachia, that's the native trout there,
right
into Michigan. And a lot of those places, the brook trout is endangered. And it was introduced probably over 100 years ago to western North America. And it seems to do exceptionally well in a lot of little streams that we have, especially in Idaho. And it seems like when it comes in contact with species of native fish like the cutthroat trout, the native species like the cutthroat trout tend to disappear.
They can't compete with, or how's that dynamic work as far as we know?
Well, it's probably, there definitely can be a competitor.
Right.
The one thing about brook trout is that they're a fall spawning fish, whereas cutthroat naturally would spawn in the spring. So they spawn in the fall, their eggs, their embryos incubate over the winter, and they emerge early in the spring. So they have kind of a size advantage over the cutthroat trout that'll emerge later in the year, kind of in June and July, for example. And so those fish are bigger. Their parents of the young of the year fish are going to be bigger, and so they think they could be a predator and also a competitor because they have that size advantage as well.
Sure. Well, so we have a number of native species here in Idaho. What are some of the things that make our fish cool compared to other fish in other states? What do we have that they don't have?
Well, I think they're very cool. It's a really, as we said, very diverse state.
Yeah.
So it has a lot of geography. You go to the north, it's got, you know, forested mountainous areas. To the south, canyon lands with desert, high desert. And the fish species that you find in those different areas can be quite different. And I think a lot of people agree that they can be locally adapted to some of the streams. If you're in the hot desert streams that we see in southern Idaho, it's kind of remarkable. And, you know, at one time I never would have thought that this could occur for a trout species, but you find natural wild populations, native populations of trout that are in desert streams and ecosystems. And they can survive pretty high temperatures that are quite interesting. You probably wouldn't see streams from the north. Those fish are in colder streams, forested colder streams, they wouldn't survive in the southern streams that you do find them here. So things like that. And because of the geological history of the area, the northern part of the state was glaciated, you know, 15 to 18,000 years ago. The southern part was not. We get different types of fish fauna in those different regions. We have some species of fish that are only found in Idaho and nowhere else in the world. So they're endemic to our state. Things like these little benthic fish called sculpin.
Okay.
Okay, and we have at least three different species of sculpin that are only found in the state or northern areas of Utah, for example. There's the Wood River sculpin that are only found in the Wood River Valley of Idaho. And then there's some springs that sort of drain into the Middle Snake area, the southern part of the Snake River. And that's where we find the Shoshone sculpin. That's another native sculpin that's only found in Idaho. And then in Bear Lake, there's an endemic Bear Lake sculpin. That's not the lake is shared with Utah, of course, but I tend to think of the Idaho side. and that's the only lake in the world where the Bear Lake sculpin is found as well. So that's...
And are those populations pretty stable? And
As far as we can tell, I mean, definitely the management agencies are concerned about protecting all the native species in the state. But like a lot of those little fish, there's not an awful lot known about them.
Sure.
Many of them that aren't game fish have had no sort of biological studies completed or published.
Are these kind of fish that maybe somebody would, you know, a lot of people recreate at Bear Lake, would they have seen this animal or is it? Cryptic. You know.
It's fairly cryptic. In fact, one thing that I encountered when I first moved to Idaho was a name that the local people call sculpins, which are blobs. And I'd never heard that name before.
Does that describe the shape of the animal?
Yeah, they're just a small little benthic fish that they're sort of mottled colored, and they can change coloration depending on what kind of substrate you find them on.
Okay.
And they're hard to see. And my hypothesis is that, you know, there's a couple of guys fishing by the streams, and one pointed down to them, what's that little blob down by your foot? Oh, it moved. Oh, it's a fish.
But it didn't really dart away. It just kind of,
yeah. So, and there are other types of sculpins that you find in Idaho and other places. Sometimes they're called muddlers.
Okay.
But they're part of the native fish fauna here. And some of them are unique, as I said. They're only found in the state.
That's great.
So when we have an invasive species, like some of the trout species, what can the state of Idaho or Fish and Game and us as citizens do to really kind of help, in a sense, control those species so they don't overrun some of our other more important native species?
Well, just be aware not to transport non-native species around. I think that's one of the big things. Many of your listeners will have heard about other types of non-native species that aren't fish, zebra mussels, New Zealand mud snails, quagga mussels. Those aren't fish species, but they can have really significant impacts on the ecosystems when they're introduced, because they can sort of take over and change the structure of the ecosystem, change the abundance of the food base for the fish, the native fish here. And they can also, you know, affect other things that humans don't want to have affected, you know, everything from intake pipes for water systems to, you know, you can imagine all kinds of ways that they can affect the ecosystem. So not transporting them. If you're moving a boat in and out of the state, you're visiting water bodies to the south. A lot of the water bodies in Arizona and Utah, you have the boat in there, you're drawing in water for ballast, or there's water in the hull of the boat, just drying it, cleaning the boat, and making sure not to carry any of those invertebrates into the state. And that's a huge concern. And the state of Idaho has been pretty proactive in trying to have these check stations to check watercraft that are coming into the state to make sure that they're not carrying non-native species in that could cause big problems for the native taxa here. Things like that, yeah.
So if you've got some cichlids and you don't want to take care of them anymore and you feel bad about disposing of them, just remember you're probably doing way more damage by putting them into
a hot spring.
Right. Yeah, so I hope you feel worse.
Yeah, don't do that either. Yes.
Well, fishing is obviously a major industry in our state, which is great. And what's the status of fishing in Idaho? Is this still an I think of it as an industry, not as necessarily commercial fishing, but, you know, as a recreational pastime for people. Is it a healthy industry right now for us?
I think so. I mean, I think we're pretty lucky in the state. If you're one of those people that likes to go fishing, there's still a lot of opportunities where you can really find excellent fishing in the state. In southern Idaho in particular, it can be quite good. Many of your listeners might know of the South Fork of the Snake River, which is really a premier cutthroat trout fishery. You can also catch rainbow trout and brown trout in that area, which are not native to that part of the state. But I think the management agencies have done quite a good job in preserving the cutthroat trout population there as well. And so that's a premier trout fishery that people come from all over the world to go fishing there because of its prominence of catching these beautiful native trout.
That's great. And As the population in Idaho is growing and growing and growing, and urbanization is sort of consuming, I guess, more of our habitats adjacent to rivers especially, what are some of the things that folks can think about, I guess, as we're developing and occupying more spaces that are encroaching, I guess, on the natural river systems?
Well, yeah, and that's going to be a huge issue for the state. It's, you know, human population is growing rapidly. We, you know, that of course, this could be a good thing.
Sure.
But we all need various types of resources. We need water, just like the fish do.
Sure.
And so anything that people can do to conserve water, use it mindfully, not overconsume it. Keeping in mind, like in areas of southern Idaho, we live in a desert, right? So anything we can do to protect the water supply, minimize consumption, that's going to help fish populations, because, you know, we don't want to be in a situation where we have to consume more and more water all the time. We want to be more of a sustainable interaction with our rivers and streams.
You know, I think people need to realize as well that conserving our river's health isn't right there at the river's edge. So as we're building and moving towards the most beautiful places in Idaho, you're going to be along rivers. You still need to keep the land around the rivers and streams native, and not necessarily mow everything down and put a dock out there and put, you know, bluegrass out there. So you need the native vegetation well past the river's edge as well.
Yes. Yeah. Habitat loss is a huge issue in all of our natural ecosystems, right? Humans tend to change it in lots of ways that the natural wild populations don't like, and they can't exist there. You know, we need some of that to exist ourselves, but, you know, we can't have uncontrolled growth if we want to have those wild populations that we enjoy for fish and lots of other kinds of animals and plants and so on.
Well, and I think the idea that the ecosystem extends beyond the specific habitat of an organism, right? So what you do beyond the river's edge affects what happens in the river where the fish lives, right? And these are all interconnected systems.
Exactly, yes. And aquatic ecosystems, one of the biggest problems, of course, is the old adage of the solution to pollution is dilution.
Sure.
And so we tend to dump a lot of our wastes and byproducts into waterways, and that changes the habitat for fish in ways that is not often very good.
Well, I appreciate this conversation, Ernest. We have a trivia question for you. I'm dying to know the answer to. There is only one native trout found in the Upper Snake River. Can you tell us what it is and tell us a little bit about that animal?
Okay. Well, that animal is the Yellowstone cutthroat trout.
Okay.
And so it's a subspecies of cutthroat trout that's found in the what I would call the Upper Snake River. So those are all part of the Snake River that's above Shoshone Falls, right?
And sure.
That's a major biogeographic barrier for a lot of fish.
The falls.
It's right. Like a 200 high foot waterfall. And so that's thought to have separated the types of fish that you find above the falls versus below, right? So above it, the only native trout is the Yellowstone cutthroat trout, even though today you can still catch wild brown trout, wild brook trout, wild rainbow trout. Those species are not native to the Upper Snake River. The Yellowstone cutthroat trout is the only
one. Interesting.
Well, that's great. And Ernest, thank you for joining us today. For those who want to learn more about fish in Idaho and the research that Ernest and Idaho State is doing, please visit the Department of Biological Sciences at Idaho State University's website. And again, thank you, Ernest.
Thanks, Ernest.
Thank you.
You bet.
The Nature of Idaho receives support from listener contributions to KISU-FM. Music is by Idaho's very own Sons of Bannock. Audio of this and all past episodes of The Nature of Idaho can be found at KISU.org, from Spotify, and other select podcast services. Send your thoughts and suggestions to NOIDKISU@ISU.edu.